Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting worldwide on Internet Radio.
Refreshing takes on legal strategies.
Straightforward answers to difficult tax questions.
Independent ideas on building wealth. It's the Refresher Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.
Now, here's Mark and Matt.
Welcome, everyone, to the Refresh Your Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen. Such a pleasure to be with you today. It's a beautiful day out there in Phoenix where I'm at. I'm sure it's pleasant wherever you are, Mark. And I want to thank all of you for being with us today, no matter how you're listening to the show. Thanks for being with us. We are now on Blog Talk Radio. You can obviously find us there. The show had been there for years before. You can also, of course, find us, and most of our listeners do, on iTunes under the Refresh Your Wealth podcast. And as always, you can go to refreshyourwealth.com for prior shows, as well as updates on upcoming shows. I want to thank everyone for being with us. Today is going to be a show about choosing the right rental property for your situation. We're going to have a special guest, Jason Hartman, join us. We'll be telling you more about him later on in the show, but Mark, I'm actually in the market for a rental property myself right now, so, and I know Jason is like one of the best on this subject, so I've got a personal interest in today's show, as I usually do.
Yeah, I think for both of us are pretty selfish. If there's anybody that benefits from the show, it's Matt and I. We get to choose topics that we think are interesting, and luckily, we share the same heart and mind as many of you, our listeners. We want to save taxes, build wealth, and good stuff. So, now, I'll give a little disclaimer here, too. This is our third show on real estate this year. And we don't want anyone that's a regular listener to think we're going to be doing that much real estate topics in the show throughout the year. But the spring, like Matt said, we've got a lot of clients that have been calling and asking about those shows, getting consults on their specific situation, and we did want to get Jason out here before the year got too far behind us. So we'll take a kind of a little rest from real estate as a primary topic of the show over the next few weeks and months, but I think many of you will find it really, really good.
Yeah, we're gonna be diving in instead to hiding your money offshore in Panama, and which will be an upcoming show, and you can see what's happened to people like Jackie Chan and the Iceland Prime Minister and all these people caught up Vladimir Putin in this Panama Papers stuff, and really we want to dive in and talk about that offshore planning and nonprofits. We got a lot of cool shows coming up, actually. I think we got a broad base of shows I think are interesting for our listeners out there. We're trying to keep it fun and education.
Yeah, we're going to keep it fun. Yeah, and on these Panama Papers, I got to tell you, I was impressed that Wesley Snipes wasn't in the list. I've got to hand it to the guy. He paid his dues. He knew he didn't want to get smacked down again, after the IRS threw him in jail, actually. So he's, this poor guy, he's the pun of every IRS joke out there, but I guess it's what happens.
We got to do a show on that too. I mean, good old Wesley Snipes. I mean, that U.S. Marshals, probably my favorite Wesley Snipes movie. And there's a little bit of truth in that. He was running from the law in real life too. It's just for not paying taxes.
That poor guy. Maybe we can get him to come out on the show. That'd be sweet. We'll try to get his agent off IMDb. Yeah. I think this is going to be a great show. So if you're just joining us, we're going to be hitting the real estate topic. We'll introduce our special guest here a little later. I want to hit a couple of announcements. This is really important. We've got a weekly newsletter that's free. I know a lot of tax and legal and financial firms charge for a newsletter that's filled with as much content as ours. there's a lot of kind of fluffy newsletters out there that are free, but this has got serious content in it. And I want to encourage all of you to sign up for the newsletter because it's free. And so this is a, you know, just to quote your regular late night TV salesman, it's free. So here's the thing, a couple important deadlines. I'm going to give a little shout out to my partner. I'm going to be speaking in Atlanta this weekend, but the big event is May 7th. And so yours truly will be there, Mark Kohler, but the main event is having Matt Sorensen host his first ever self-directed IRA summit, which I know he's going to be doing biannually or at least annually. We're going to, you know, I'm going to push him to do it twice a year, but it's going to be fun, Matt. Do you want to tell anybody about it? And I mean, you didn't expect me to throw this out there. I mean, I want you guys to know.
I appreciate
listeners.
This. Yeah. Pardon the commercial interruption, but this show is brought to you by the Self-Directed IRA Summit coming up on Saturday, May 7th. Now, this is going to be live in Scottsdale, Arizona at the Scottsdale Resort. Come live. It's going to be cool. Obviously, you know, Mark and I will be there. We have some other awesome speakers. And for any of you that self-direct a retirement account, we have thousands of clients that do. This is a critical topic. Or any of you that are thinking, and I know some of you are listening to this because it's a real estate topic, you're thinking, how can my IRA buy actual real estate, like deeded real estate, not like a fund of real estate or a REIT, like real, like the rental property around the block? Okay, that's what we're going to be talking about at the Self-Directed IRA Summit, Saturday, May 7th at the Scottsdale Resort. Now, for those of you coming live, Scottsdale in May is the best time because it's like beautiful in the morning. It's cool and crisp, perfect to play golf, but then it's warm enough to just chill out by the pool in the afternoon. So make a weekend of it, come into town, or you can watch it virtually. We're having a professional production company come and stream it virtually. You can watch in your pajamas at home if you want to.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm actually a little sad, Matt. I can't believe you didn't say this. Make a weekend of it and get a tax write-off, folks. This is your tax-deductible freaking weekend. So I've been pounding the travel drum for months around the holidays.
There you go.
So make it a tax write-off and come down. And I'll just say one more note about it, too, that and it's hard for Matt to mention all this. You've got to just go to the website and check out the newsletter link. Get there. Matt, you'll share the website here in 2 seconds. But the important thing, too, is for any of you that are professionals, this is continuing education credit. So we'll give you a certificate that you can use with the outline to submit to any of your licensing divisions around the country. So that's going to be at least 6 hours of content, and we'll give you a certificate. But, Matt, what's the website so people can register?
Yes. SDIRA for Self-Directed IRA, SDIRASummit.com. It's an awesome website, has the details of the entire event. And if you are subscribed to our newsletter, there is a discount in there for the event. So check that out.
There you go. If you need the newsletter, if you want to ask us any questions about that, you can email myself, Mark, M-A-R-K, at KKOS Lawyers. Or Matt, M-A-T, at KKOS Lawyers as well. We went with KKOS Lawyers. We're going to do KKK Lawyers, but our media company said that would be a bad idea. So we went with KKOS Lawyers. So just throwing that out. So it's Matt, M-A-T, at KKOS, as in Kyler Kohler, Miller & Sorensen. Now, hey, in the newsletter, there was a few other things. There's choosing the right rental property for your situation. I've got a article on that topic right in the newsletter. We've got due diligence on real estate deals, how to write off your technology and cell phones, a great article on the Panama Papers, which is going to be the topic of next week's show. And we're going to talk about Puerto Rico too. If you're going to go offshore and save taxes or hide, what are those issues? So we're going to have a really good discussion next week on this offshore topic. And then Matt has an article on asset protection with your IRA. And there's a new little video on installment sales if you're selling real estate. How does the installment sale work? So a fun little video. Okay, so there's some announcements, very, very important. And Matt, are you ready to jump into the legal tip? You want to throw down on a legal tip?
Yeah.
Okay, here we go.
Let's get legal.
A legal tip that you can actually use.
A legal tip where you don't feel like you have to take a shower after.
All right. Okay. Well, this one, I mean, you should shower regularly regardless, but this one's not going to require anything extra special. So I want to give a tip if it comes out. You can read the details in my asset protection for your self-directed IRA article that was in the newsletter and on my site. And I want to give a specific tip, though, about solo 401k plans and some confusions people have had about solo 401k plans. We've set up over 100 solo 401k plans this last year for clients, and it's a great option for self-employed people that want to self-direct in particular, want to save on taxes, and it's a great option. But there's one big misconception I see out there in the marketplace that is one of my points in my newsletter, and I want to give as a tip today. When we talk about asset protection, one of the coolest things of asset protection is retirement plans because you can stock tons of money over in the retirement accounts, whether it's an IRA, a 401k, doesn't matter what it is. And you can literally like file bankruptcy and still keep your retirement account. Now, there is a distinction, though, in asset protection for retirement accounts between IRAs and 401ks or pensions or what would be employer-based plans. Now, a 401k or an employer-based plan, like your employer provides it, or you're self-employed, and so you as the employer create a solo 401k. Employer-based plans are under what's called a law's ERISA, whereas IRAs are not part of ERISA. And what that means for asset protection, the reason that even matters, is IRAs fall under state laws in terms of asset protection rules. 401ks, pension plans typically fall under ERISA. Now, ERISA has the best asset protection laws. Believe it or not, the federal government gave the strongest asset protection laws in ERISA. IRAs, though, it's hit and miss on what states have great asset protection for your IRA. For example, California's is kind of weak. It's like, well, we'll protect your money in your IRA from creditors as long as you really need the money for your care and benefit or the care and benefit of your dependents. In other words, if you're rich and you get into trouble, someone can maybe get into your IRA. So the California's kind of not a great state for IRA protection. So a lot of people have said, hey, go set up a solo 401k. They're better than IRAs for asset protection. And that's the problem is that's actually incorrect. And that's the tip I want to get today. And sorry for the long lead-in. I got to kind of set the stage for this. But the tip is solo 401ks for asset protection purposes are going to be treated the same as IRAs. Because even though a solo 401k is an employer-based plan, you know, a 401k, it is not subject to ERISA because there's no other employees other than owners. Therefore, it falls more like an IRA and is treated as an IRA for asset protection purposes. So, and I've had clients who set up solo 401ks just for that purpose over an IRA. And I wouldn't, so I just want to clarify that. Don't go out for the solo 401k for asset protection. There's other awesome reasons to do a solo K, but that's one that's marketed out there that's actually not true. So that's the tip. Solo 401ks do not get ERISA asset protection treatment. I got more details in my newsletter article if you want to read the cases and details.
All right, Matt, I love it. Now that's a great tip. I know that was a lot to get through, but I'm glad you set the stage for that because it can get really confusing. I want to apologize for those of you that fell asleep at the wheel and were in a car accident and are now calling 911. That's Matt's fault.
Yeah.
I just want to throw that out.
I know. I know. Yeah.
That was good. Good.
Sometimes the law, you just can't make it fun. You know, you just can't.
Yeah. You just can't. Yeah. As Matt would, I'll quote the infamous Matt Sorensen, sometimes you just can't dress up a turd. So you've just got to.
Right.
You gotta go throw it out there. So it's good.
It is.
Good stuff. Oh man. All right. Now I'm gonna throw and that's I Matt, I hope you don't mind me joking around with you. It's good stuff. Okay. I'm gonna try to throw down a tax tip, and ironically, it's related to the 401k too. Ugh. Oh my gosh.
A tax tip you can actually understand and won't put you to sleep.
A tax tip that could save you thousands.
Okay, now let me throw this out here. I don't want you guys to, you know, if you're a new listener here, you're like, what are these guys doing? Are they financial guys trying to sell us on you know, all these 401k IRA things. We're not. We're here to protect your assets. We're here to save you taxes. And my taxes.
That's okay. Those are just the two most common retirement accounts everyone has in the United States. It's the largest concentration of wealth of where any investable cash is. That's the reason we're talking about it. Okay. So you probably got more money in these accounts than you do in your bank account and your investment account and savings account. So I'm just sticking up for us.
There's a reason.
Because you're not.
Yeah, no, we got to cover it. We got to cover it. And all of you are worried about your tax returns. Either you've just filed them recently here in April or are on extension and you're trying to figure out ways to save taxes. So here's my tip. If some of you, my small business owners out there, did not do a 401k in December or last year and get it set up, you're screwed. You can't do a 401k for last year if you didn't have it set up last year. That's why we do a special in the fall to help a lot of clients get over that hump and get their 401k done. Call us now if you want to start self-directing one. But the 401k had to have been done last year. So here is your get out of jail free card. What you can do is contribute to a SEP, the SEP. It's like a supercharged IRA, not as good as a 401k, but better than a regular IRA. And you can put up to 25% of your compensation if you did a salary out of your S-Corp, or 25% of your net income if you had an LLC or a sole prop. But you can make that contribution now if you're on extension and get a tax deduction for last year. Then the cool thing is, when you do set up your 401k this year, you can roll that SEP into it and get rid of the freaking SEP. We don't want to be in the SEP. The SEP is crappy. It's old school. But it has this sliver of opportunity that if you forgot to do the 401k and you're wanting to catch up and do a write-off for last year, that's where the SEP pays off. Do the SEP now. Roll the money over to your 401k later this year, when you do it right. And the 401k is going to outperform the SEP in contributions and minimizing self-employment tax every time. So we want to get to the 401k. And if you're like, whoa, what the heck? My guy's been selling me a SEP for years. Get a consult with Matt or I for just 15 minutes, and we can bust down the benefits of the 401k versus the SEP. But that'll only be for 16. So there's your strategy. Matt, what do you think? Is that cool? Throwing it down?
I love it, dude. I love how you use the SEP and describe it there. And I think it's every time I talk to someone that has a SEP, we talk about moving that into a 401k. And I know, as you said, Mark, this, man, we're talking about, we're kind of giving tips in the same ballpark, but there's so much money and so much tax and savings opportunities with retirement accounts. It's something we just really feel we got to communicate and help educate our listeners on.
No, it's good stuff. Okay, now,
all right.
We give you, the listener, an opportunity to win a free copy of mine or Matt's book with free shipping. This is a big deal. We hate to give things away. Matt and I are really cheap, but we will give away a book to anybody that has an answer to our question of the week. We want to keep you engaged. And for some of you driving down the road right now, this is a live show. So you've got an opportunity to win right now. And if you're listening on iTunes, even, you know, later this weekend, hey, we sometimes have winners collect on Saturday or Sunday when they're listening to the podcast. So you can respond to our question of the week right away and have an opportunity to win a book, give it away to a friend or family member. So, Matt, you had the question last week. Did we have a winner?
Yes, we did. All right, let me give the question of the week, and then I'll announce our winner and the response. So the question last week was, how much money can you have in an offshore bank account without having to report it to the IRS? All right. Now, this is coming, you know, Panama Paper topic. Sorry, I'm kind of into this Panama Papers topic, but this is something you want to know, and I think others, we've seen a lot of people over the years get more interest in putting money offshore, buying real estate offshore, looking to retire off, you know, in foreign countries in the Caribbean and stuff like that. And so I think this is a really important topic, and one that if you're not up to speed on with the IRS, let's just say you end up with a new friend from the Internal Revenue Service. who's really not a friend, but you're going to try and make him your friend to keep him happy. All right, here's the answer. So we had John write in, and John, I don't know where you're from here, but John wrote in and said, I presume the total amount you could have is 9,999, because if you have 10,000 or more, you must report and use a form, and he cites the form here, FBAR. So that is exactly the right answer, except for $1, but we're gonna give it to John here. So the correct answer is any value that exceeds $10,000, any account, or this could be a collection of multiple accounts that exceed $10,000, you must report that account or those accounts to the IRS. And the form that John mentioned there is called FBAR. That's a report of foreign bank account financial account. I know the letters aren't in the right order there, but that's the IRS for you. This is form 114. So that's the FBAR account and rule. And just keep in mind, it's 10,000, in excess of 10,000, you have to make that report. Now, there's a lot of weird little exceptions to this. Actually, IRAs are exempt from this. There's a number of exemptions here, but let me give you a couple examples of what aren't exempt, though, too, because I think this is where a lot of people get some missteps on this we've seen over the years. Some people will say, well, it's not my account. I have an LLC, let's say, in Wyoming that has a bank account in the Bahamas or the British Virgin Islands or something like that, or Belize. And they say, well, so I don't have to report it because I don't own that account. This Wyoming LLC does. Now, a U.S.-based company or a U.S.-incorporated company must still report using at this FBAR form. So that's probably the one we see the most non-compliance of. So just keep in mind, even if you have U.S.-based companies that have foreign accounts, you still got to report using this FBAR if their bank accounts exceed $10,000.
Well, great question, and John, congratulations. That 10 grand, that's the easy thing to remember. If you have this 10 grand offshore or anywhere, just fall in line. You don't want to be a part of the New Jersey papers or the Manhattan papers or the Panama papers. Just stay away from any papers. I don't want any of my clients in papers. That's a bad thing.
That's true. It's never been a good thing, the Pentagon papers.
Yeah. Yeah. We don't want the KKOS papers released, you know, so
that's right.
let's stay on top of folks. Okay. Now here's the question for this week. And then we're going to jump on it. So this is really, really important. I love this topic. And so we're going to switch to a little asset protection here. So here's the question of the week. And for the first one to respond via email to Mark, M-A-R-K, at kkoslawyers.com or Matt, M-A-T, at kkoslawyers.com, you will win a copy of either of our books. So here's the question. I'm going to go out and buy a rental property, and I'm going to buy this rental property in Arizona. Maybe while I'm down going to my self-directed IRA summit, taking a tax write-off on May 7th, I'll think, hey, I'm going to go out and buy a rental property while I'm down here. There's some good deals down here, lots of growth, good stuff, and I pick up a rental in Arizona. In fact, I'm so excited by my trip, I'm going to buy multiple rentals in Arizona, and that's my goal over the next year or two. So I think to myself, I'm going to set up a Series LLC. Oh, but Arizona doesn't have a Series LLC, so I'm going to set up my Series LLC out of Utah or Nevada or Texas or some state that has Series LLCs. But then I'll just register it in Arizona, so I'll be good to go. So, folks, my question is, will you get the same Series LLC protection in Arizona by registering there with your Series LLC from a Series state? Can I use a Series LLC in a non-Series state like Arizona and get the same protection? For those that don't know Series LLCs, go watch my YouTube video. We got plenty of blog articles on the KKOS Lawyers website on this. That's where you can do your homework and quickly respond via email. And the first correct answer will win a copy of either mine or Matt's books. So what do you think,
Matt? Hard enough?
I like that. That was – I know we've they can figure this one out. This one's not too tricky. There are some differences of opinion out there. I'm gonna tell you about that. If you get around, you start researching this online, you might see some differences of opinion. Of course, our opinion is going to carry weight as the correct answer. So look forward to a series of responses from people on this important series LLC question.
I like it. And we might be moving over into this asset protection topic for the rest of the show, which I think is very, very important. And we can, of course, stick with this theme of real estate. But I want to confirm here, we had some technical difficulties previously, and I'm going to bring Jennifer out here, our studio producer here. Hey, Jennifer, do we have Jason on the line, or should we stay with this topic of asset protection?
Here he is. He pressed in one right now. I'm going to put his name on, okay?
All right, gotcha. We'll bring him right out then. Okay.
Okay.
Well, thanks so much, Jennifer. All right. Well, we've got to introduce our special guest. We're excited to have him here on the show, Jason Hartman. JasonHartman.com. The link is in our newsletter, so you can get right over to him. Jason is a national expert in real estate. He's a broker that helps clients find properties all over the country. He's got an amazing team. He's one of the literally few real estate brokers we know that have a portfolio nationwide. He releases a report every year on the hot markets and the cold markets around the country. And it's hard to find a real estate broker like this. We've got great referral sources of real estate brokers and agents and real estate investors in little pockets of the country. If you say, I want to buy real estate in Chicago, or I want to buy real estate in Miami, we're going to have a referral for you. But if you're saying, I just want to look around the country and I don't know where to go, Jason Hartman is the guy. He does a fantastic job. And his workshops around the country every year, he's helping people find the right rental property for their situation. So that's the topic of our show today. We want to look at different scenarios, what type of rental usually fits what type of person, what are my options out there? And I know Jason is consulting with people every day about helping them find a rental that fits their situation and their needs. And so we're going to have some fun with this and bring up some scenarios and see how Jason would respond. And we're just grateful to have him here with us. So, Jason, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Mark and Matt. Good to talk to you guys again.
Yeah, pleasure.
Yeah, and you know, I should have even said too, many of you may have heard Jason on his podcasts on iTunes. He's got several podcasts he does throughout the week. They're excellent. And before we get off the line with Jason, we'll have him, of course, mention some of these resources that you guys, our listeners, can tune into Jason on his podcast or get to his website, which is just phenomenal. So, well, Jason, I'm going to throw out, you know, just kind of this general question. How do you approach someone when they consult with you and they're looking for rentals and you're trying to find the right rental property for them? What are some of the things you consider? And then maybe we'll throw out some scenarios that might be creative.
Yeah, great question. And by the way, as I was listening for the last 20 minutes, I love your talk about the Panama Papers. Matt, I can't wait to hear that show next week because that's a fascinating topic and discussing it with my listeners and on my show. So really interesting stuff. But, you know, I was kind of thinking about you guys last night and this morning and what angle to take as we talk on the show today and talk to your listeners. And I was thinking at the core of what you guys do, and you've helped me do it over the years, you help people mitigate risk. You help people reduce risk of doing a bad business deal. Matt, you've drawn up some contracts for me over the years, which have really helped. And, on the accounting side, you help people mitigate tax risk and tax liability. And about 19 years into my career, I discovered something. And I think this will answer your question, maybe in a roundabout way, but I call it the Hartman Risk Evaluator. And it takes into account the different types of real estate markets around the country and helps people massively reduce the risk when they're investing and when they're picking a property. And I kind of thought we'd talk about that because I think it goes along, you know, in line with what you guys really do at the core of your businesses in accounting and law. You help people mitigate risk. I mean, would you agree with that?
Absolutely. Yeah, I I think that's a good summary. Well, tell us about the Hartman Risk Evaluator. It's kind of a nice name, like I got to say.
I'd like
yeah,
it.
Yeah, so when people buy a property, they usually think, Matt and Mark, that they're buying one thing, and they're really buying two things. They're buying the land, and they're buying the structure on the land, the improvement, the house, the apartment complex, whatever it is. And so when you divide up these two components, as you should when you invest, you can really drill down and reduce risk dramatically. And I'll just tell you kind of a little story. Back in 2004, when I was starting to invest nationwide, you know, I grew up in Southern California, lived in Orange County, California at the time, and I was just starting to look at the whole country as, you know, investing in different markets around the country. And interestingly, I was buying a house in Orange County, and at the same time, pretty much concurrently, I was buying another house in Georgia. And the house in Orange County was $815,000, and the house in Georgia was $159,000. And in doing this, I was getting insurance for both properties, of course, which is required by the lender before you close. And my insurance agent, located in Irvine, California, Jennifer, calls me up and says, hey, Jason, we're going to give you $135,000 worth of insurance on the Georgia property. And we're going to give you $189,000 worth of insurance on the California property. And I thought, that's interesting. Here I'm paying $815,000 for one property, and you're only giving me, it was $156,000 worth of insurance. And on the Georgia property, I'm paying $159,000, yet you're giving me $135,000 worth of insurance. Why is this? Well, when you think about it, the insurance company doesn't insure the land. The land will always be there. They only insure the improvement, in other words, the house sitting on the land, because that could burn down. It could be destroyed and be of no economic value. So you're getting insurance on the structure. And what I realized at that point was that I was really investing. I thought my best investments were investing in commodities, really, at the heart of it. I call them packaged commodities investments, because when you buy an inexpensive house, a property that makes sense, that has good cash flow, you're really buying a set of commodities, and you're buying them at or below the actual cost. You're buying lumber, concrete, copper wire, petroleum products, energy, glass, and steel. Those are the primary ingredients of this house or apartment complex. And so in Georgia, I was spending $135,000 for those things, and in Irvine, I was spending $156,000, yet I was paying dramatically more in Southern California. And so what I noticed is that my downside risk on the Georgia property was much lower than it was on the Irvine property, because it sets kind of a stop loss or a bit of a floor on your downside risk when you're not investing in these high land value markets. And so that's kind of the topic I thought we might want to address today.
Well, I love that. And sorry about the little delay there, but I like what you're saying, because it's a fresh look or a different perspective of what you've taught me for years, Jason. As I've watched your workshop, your listen to your podcast, watched you present, you always discourage, I shouldn't say always, you generally discourage clients from going into these high-priced markets where you're overpaying for properties and your ROI just goes through the floor. You just don't get a great return.
It's terrible.
So I love this perspective. Yeah. So it's I like this look at, because you basically just peeled away the onion and said, why are you overpaying in California or these coastal communities around the country when I could go into the breadbasket of the country and get a better return on my money because I'm not overpaying for the land? I like the way that you presented that.
Absolutely. So here's what happened after I bought both of these properties, right? And the property in Irvine went up in value substantially as the market was going crazy. And I bought it for $815, and just about a year later, I noticed the value is going up quite a bit. And I said, hey, I want to refinance. I want to strip equity out of the property and use that equity to buy more properties. I'm a big believer in low-cost, long-term, fixed-rate debt. And so I didn't quite have my whole investment philosophy formulated way back then in 2004, but I called the bank. They sent an appraiser over. His name was Eric, and he said, congratulations, Mr. Hartman. Your property is now worth $1.3 million. And I thought, do I love real estate or what? You know, here only a year goes by, and I have a $485,000 gain. But I knew, Mark and Matt, that was not sustainable. That was a bubble. You just could tell it had, the writing was on the wall that it was a bubble. And so when we look at what went up in value, you know, it's just a year later. Was it the improvement or was it the land? And I would say it was largely the land value that increased. And then just a year later again, I called the bank because the rates had gone down, and I said, hey, I want to refinance again. And they send the exact same appraiser out. His name was Eric. The same guy comes out. And he says, hey, I hate to tell you, this year, your property has gone down in value. It's only worth $1,235,000. So I'm still up, but I lost some money. And so what went down in value? In other words, 2 years into that deal, would it cost me more to rebuild the house, the improvement sitting on the land, or would it cost less? Well, it would actually cost a little bit more to rebuild the improvement if it were to burn down. So what went down, the depreciation in that property came out of the land value. And it's very important to segment this up into its two component parts, land and improvement. And you'll notice when you look at real estate markets all around the world, this holds true worldwide, doesn't matter where you are, there are three types of real estate markets. There is a cyclical market, and these are the high-flying markets that get on the news. There are places like Miami. There are virtually all of the Socialist Republic of California. There are virtually all of the Pacific Northwest, the expensive northeastern markets, whether they be Washington, D.C., New York, Boston, et cetera. All of these expensive markets, and outside of the country, Paris, London, Hong Kong, Tokyo, all of these markets are cyclical markets. They have glorious highs and really ugly lows. They're like a roller coaster. And then there are linear markets, these markets that just sort of chug along, and they'll average appreciation between 4 and 6 or 7% annually. They'll just kind of chug along and do their thing. And those markets have very low land value, while the cyclical markets have very high land value. Now, there's a third type in between market. It's called the hybrid market. And these markets, and Mark, you mentioned it, where you're having your upcoming seminar in Phoenix, right? And I happen to live in Scottsdale, Arizona, a Phoenix suburb. And this is a hybrid market. It's kind of in between the two, where you have some big areas of appreciation, but fundamentally you have some very linear characteristics ultimately, where it always kind of reverts to that mean linear appreciation curve. And another good example of a hybrid market would be a place like Atlanta, Georgia, that was always linear in the past, but now would be considered hybrid because it did about 10% appreciation last year. And so when you dice it up into these three markets and you think of what type of investor are you? Are you a big risk taker? Are you a very conservative person? I know that over the years, I've definitely become very conservative with my money because, hey, I don't like losing money. It's too hard to earn it all over again. And so I tend to favor now these linear markets that have very good cash flow characteristics. They have low land values. This is how you can tell they're linear, because the land value is low. So the example of those two properties I discussed earlier, when you look at the Irvine, California property, the improvement value on that property was $156,000, and the land value was $660,000. The Georgia property, by contrast, the land value was only $24,000, and the improvement value was $135,000. So when you compare the two of these, if disaster happens, if there's another shoe to drop in the economy, and many people think one is coming, right? It's, you know, usually there's this kind of 7 to 10 year cycle in the real estate market and in the stock market. It exists in all markets virtually. If there's another shoe to drop, where do you want to be? Do you want to be in a market where most of your asset is delineated in high land value that could evaporate virtually overnight? Or do you want to be controlling these commodities, packaged commodities, all those ingredients of a house, where your land is really cheap or basically free, and it's mostly commodity value, where your cash flow is really good, where you can receive about 1% of the value of that property per month?
Hey, Jason, let me I love that. This is deep, and I'm loving this analysis here. As I'm looking at just, you know, I buy real estate myself, and I know you don't just talk about this. You're out there doing this yourself and are a very successful real estate investor yourself. But, you know, it seems like there's so much less downside risk, which is really your point here, in these linear markets, because there's nothing artificial there, this land value you're talking about, to really fall. You know, people have to live somewhere. They're going to build it. It's going to cost the same to build generally. There's a lot less downside risk. And I think where these hybrid markets could have been big, these cyclical markets could have been big, was when the market fell apart and these land values went down. But we've kind of missed all those. So the opportunities to get back on the upswing are probably gone. Now you missed the opportunity, really, if you're looking to buy now. So I think really these linear markets are the markets to be looking for rentals. And maybe could you give us an example of like a property maybe you've bought recently or a client of yours bought recently? It's like, all right, this is kind of a good rental property right now to be looking for in a linear market. Here's what you can buy it for. Here's what it rents for. Maybe kind of give us a practical example of what you're seeing in these linear markets right now.
Absolutely. So last year, and I'm doing it again now, but I haven't acquired the two properties yet. Actually, Matt, you helped me with this. I did a 1031 tax deferred exchange. I've done many of them over the years, and you've helped me with, I believe, two of them now at KKOS. And basically, income property is the most tax-favored asset in America. Sorry for the little tangent, but I just want to point that out. And so you can trade it all your life and not pay the tax. With any other investment, if you sell your stock, if you sell your business, you've got to pay the government and give them about a third to 40-some-odd percent of that money before you get to reinvest your after-tax dollars. Now, of course, you could do this in a qualified plan like you were talking about before I came on the show today, and there are some things there. But mostly, you know, we're doing most of this stuff, the bulk of it, probably outside of a plan. So that's a beautiful thing. So here's what I did last year and what I'm currently doing again right now as we speak. In fact, I'm closing on the what they call the relinquished property tomorrow. I'm signing the docs today. And so last year, because it's complete, I'll tell you about that deal. I sold a property that had appreciated in Charlotte, North Carolina. I purchased that property for somewhere around $150,000, and I had very good cash flow on it over the years. It was a great performing property. I really liked it. And as the years went on, I probably owned it for about, 8 years or so. I started getting a little more repair bills, and I started getting a bit annoyed by that. But then I checked the appreciation, and the property had gone up in value. It was worth about $220,000. And so I thought, well, gosh, now my rent-to-value or RV ratio is not as good because the property has appreciated. So I want to improve that. So I sell the Charlotte, North Carolina property on a 1031 tax-deferred exchange, and I buy two properties in Memphis. I take my cash flow from about $1,500 per month up to about $2,100 per month. No taxable event. I defer the gain into the new properties, and I have greater diversification because now if I just own one property and it goes vacant, I'm 100% vacant. Now, I own many other properties as well. I have single-family homes, two apartment complexes, and a mobile home park. But with this one example, if it goes vacant, I'm 100% vacant. And now I've got two in Memphis. If one goes vacant, I'm only 50% vacant, and my cash flow is about $600 better per month, really more than 25% better. And so that's a great example. Memphis, a very linear market, kind of a boring market. It never makes the headlines. It's very blue-collar. You know, it's sort of the logistics capital of the country. A lot of people work for FedEx. One of our local market specialists there said, I love Memphis because it's this market where everybody rents and they make $40,000 a year. And that's like a perfect renter market. But Orlando, Little Rock, some of the, believe it or not, and I'm kind of surprised I came around to this. It took a few years, but some of the Chicagoland areas are very good. And by the way, I heard a guest on your show. I'd like to address some of his points a while back. Atlanta's still pretty good. Birmingham, Indianapolis has been a perennial favorite for many years. And I've done this kind of thing in many markets, and we help our clients do this in many markets. We just love these linear markets because the history of market timing in every asset class on earth is very poor. Market timers, it just never seems to work out for those guys. You know, you can go to Vegas and put all your chips on red or black, you know, you might win, but you also might lose. And so market timing just generally doesn't work. So I say, well, put your money on good cash flow properties in linear markets.
I love it. Well, Jason, let me ask another question in kind of, and I, your concepts and then your examples are just spot on, but I'd like to ask you to take that concept and apply it to maybe a couple scenarios so our listener can apply it in their situation potentially. It isn't different between two scenarios, but let me ask, say you've got an older couple, they're nearing retirement. They finally have seen the light. They want to start buying some rental properties. They may have 10 more years of W-2 wage earning going on, but they want to start building a real estate portfolio but they're new to the game. And then you've got another scenario of a younger person that is maybe more of a risk taker, and they want to really build a long-term career in real estate and investing and buying rentals. When you have maybe an older couple versus a younger couple or a more conservative versus risk taker, does your concept change or the type of property you look for when you're trying to apply this the Hartman risk analysis to two different couples? How would you go through that? What would it look like?
Yeah, that's a great question, Mark. So it would change only a little. Because here's the thing, we talked about what I call the LTI ratio. We've all heard of the LTV ratio, the loan-to-value ratio. Well, I talk about the land-to-improvement ratio, the LTI ratio. And I wanted to bring this up because this is something that nobody is talking about. I've never heard it anywhere. It's completely original thought. And When you look at this older couple versus a younger couple, and obviously the younger person, you know, the general thinking is in the financial planning world is they have time to earn it back. So they can afford to take more risk, and the older person doesn't have time to earn it back or maybe just doesn't want to hassle with earning it back. And so they need to be more conservative in their investments. But I'll tell you something. The second very important element to all of this, and we only touched on it, it's the cash flow. And so I would say that younger person still wants to invest for ROI, for return on investment. And when it comes to cash flow in the cyclical markets, the high land value markets that would score badly on the Hartman Risk Evaluator, the cash flow is generally, it looks something like this. You can buy a $600,000 property and rent it for about $1,800 per month. And amazingly, this is true anywhere in the world. I've been to 79 countries now, and I've looked at real estate deals in almost all of them. And I'll tell you, if you're buying something in Paris or Rome or Memphis or Los Angeles, it does not matter. It works in every currency on earth. So here's how it looks. The $600,000 property rents for about $1,800 per month, or a 600,000 euro property rents for 1,800 euros per month. Yen, yuan, euro, dollar, doesn't matter. It's all the same. It's all just math and proportions. But in the linear market, you could buy six $100,000 single-family homes and rent them for $1,000 per month each and get $6,000 per month. And hopefully, if you follow my plan, I have something I call the 10 Commandments of Successful Investing. One of them is thou shalt diversify. So you would take and you would split that up into three different metro areas. You might buy two in Orlando, two in Memphis, and two in Indianapolis, as an example. And so you would be diversified because there's an old saying in real estate that all real estate is local. Now, the difference between the older and the younger person in that example is that maybe the younger person gets into the more hybrid-type markets. They get into Atlanta, Phoenix, some of the Chicagoland areas, which do have the chance of having greater appreciation, but still have pretty low risk because the ultimate thing, and this is commandment number five from my Ten Commandments, thou shalt not gamble. And that means the property has to make sense the day you buy it or you just don't buy it. And making sense is determined by cash flow. It's determined by the rent-to-value ratio. And if you can get somewhere in the neighborhood of 1% of the value per month, you're going to have what I call a sustainable investment. And real estate is a marathon, not a sprint. It is a game of endurance. We all know people who've made money in real estate, and we know people who've lost money in real estate. And I will tell you, the people who have lost every single time have lost because they were forced to sell an asset at an inopportune time. And the reason they were forced is because the asset didn't have good cash flow or they got a divorce. And those are the two wealth destroyers right there. Okay? So
hey, Jason,
time your divorces. Get divorced at the right time. That's one thing when the market's at a peak.
Yeah. I'm going to tell my wife that. So it's part of our plan.
Okay, good.
hey, one thing, we're getting short on time here. I want to talk about this. You talked about the RV, I think it's rent to value. As you were analyzing moving from your North Carolina property, the one North Carolina property, into two in Memphis, Tennessee. So can maybe give a quick little breakdown of the RV, how someone calculates that, and then what a good figure is right now in the market to look for what that variable number is, I guess.
Yeah, good question. So the RV ratio is a really quick, really simple rule of thumb. It doesn't tell you everything, but it tells you a lot really quickly. And basically, I want everybody listening to get somewhere in the neighborhood of 1% of the value per month, not 0.3%. So if you buy a $1 million property and rent it for $3,000 a month, that is not a good deal. That is a very risky, risky gambling-oriented investment. But if you buy 10 $100,000 single-family homes and rent them for $1,000 each, you'll have $10,000 per month for $1 million of assets. You're getting 1%. So you're in great shape there. And Matt, one distinction on the RV ratio and the rent-to-value ratio, please note, listeners, that this is not called the rent to what I paid for it back in 1984 ratio. It's called the rent to value ratio. Okay.
Yeah.
Meaning the value today versus the rent today. Even if you paid less for it and your basis is lower, you could have a bad investment on your hands if it's highly appreciated. You have a bunch of sleepy, lazy equity that is not working for you, and you need to put it to work.
Oh, like Jason, I just love your approach. I forget not having you on the show every other month, which we probably should, because you're just so insightful. I love this. This has been freaking awesome. I just love your approach to this. I've been sitting here almost in a daze just taking notes and soaking it in, because believe it or not, folks, Matt and I, when we get together and we're going to be hanging out the day before his summit in Phoenix, we're going to be talking about rental property and talking about our investments. Guys, it just the good old Dave Ramsey approach. Live within your means. Eat beans and rice if you have to, and take a more important approach and value to saving and investing than to spending and acquiring. Folks, we've got to start applying these principles. And Jason, you're just a consummate investor. We love you. How do people get a hold of you? Where should we send them? JasonHartman.com, obviously. Is there any place else you'd like to let our listeners know to catch your info?
Just my website. My website is, of course, just my name, Jason Hartman, and that's HARTMAN.com, JasonHartman.com. And my podcasts are available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, SoundCloud, Blog Talk Radio, like yours, Mark. And so you can find me anywhere. Just search my name. My most popular show is called The Creating Wealth Show, and I've been doing that one for 10 years now. We've had some very distinguished guests, including Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen, along with Steve Forbes and G. Edward Griffin and Ben Carson and Austin Peterson, the Libertarian candidate that Rand Paul just endorsed. And we got some really, really interesting guests on the show. And we dive deep into these topics, folks. What Matt and Mark are doing and what I'm doing is this education is mostly free today. It's either free or really inexpensive. The other thing, don't pay a bunch of money for this stuff. I mean, you know, if there's some nominal fees to go to some events or buy some educational products, that's fine. But there are so many of these promoters out there selling this ridiculously expensive stuff. You just don't need it. You can listen to your show, listen to my show, and you get tons of information there.
Yeah,
like you said, Mark,
point.
It's free.
Yeah, there you go. Matt, I think we cut you off. What were you going to say?
No, I was just going to make sure Jason got his podcast out. Happy to be back on your podcast, Jason, and thanks for coming on ours today. For everyone else, keep in mind you can find prior versions of the Refresh Your Wealth show under iTunes under the Refresh Your Wealth podcast. Also, there's more details under refreshyourwealth.com. And please sign up for the newsletter as we'll announce our new shows upcoming. And you'll know what's obviously going on in terms of our blog articles that we're trying to be studious about writing each week to help give more free signal.
Yeah. And Jason, thank you again for coming on. Folks, Jason Hartman, we love this guy. So get to jasonhartman.com. Thanks, Jason. Will you come back again?
Yes, happy investing to you and your listeners.
Thank you. Well, folks, please note to your friends and family, every Wednesday at noon, we'll be here live with Refresh Your Wealth. So we'll see you next Wednesday at noon, and catch us on iTunes. Keep living the dream.
Thanks for listening to another hour of refreshing strategies to better live your American dream.
Don't forget to get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.